Blog Talk Radio.
Lift every voice and sing, children that heaven ring, ring with the harmony of liberty. The faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought.
Better love. You are listening to the Truth to Power show, and my name is Beverly, and we have one of the living legends with us tonight, and that's Raymond Funtroy, and he was a driver of Dr. Martin Luther King. He was the former president of SCLC and other things too that we're going to talk about tonight. So let me bring my guests up here. Hold on a minute here. Mr. Raymond Funroy, is that pronouncing that right?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Thank you for joining me tonight. Okay.
Well, thank you
excellent,
for the invite.
Excellent.
Yeah.
A pleasure. A pleasure. Okay. Well, hold on. I got people calling me. Let me. Okay, now. All right. And also I have Ms. Kim Weston is on the line with me, too. So we all connected, helping her get in to the program. So thank
Amen.
You, like I say, for joining us. And now tell us, we're going to start backwards and we're going to work our way up to right now. So tell us about you. Did you do? I guess we could start with Martin Luther King, and then we'll go to the SCLC and just work ourselves up here, because this is history, and we got to know history to know where we're going.
Well, let me just first say thank you and for what you do. You're very important to our people and to the future of not only our people but of this country and of the world as we see it now. We have an opportunity to organize ourselves and to take our rightful places and our rightful place in this world family. I thank you for what you do, and I appreciate you. I want you to know that.
And
as far
I appreciate
as I'm concerned,
you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, love. I started with the rights movement, the human rights movement, as a young boy. I didn't know what racism was. I didn't know that we lived in a different kind of world, but I couldn't understand it until I got about 11 years old. I got in the soapbox derby, and my brother, Walter, the former congressman, and I built my soapbox racer to get in the soapbox derby in Washington, D.C., and we built a very good car. As a matter of fact, we won that entire race, but they didn't allow our first place finish. They took it away from us and gave it to a white boy. That was my first encounter, and it angered me so. It stuck with me even till today. What they did and what they are doing, they have done to melanated people in this country and in the world today. So as I grew, and I'm going to skip around a little bit, but I joined the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in 1957 when I met Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. at New Bethel Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., that my brother was the pastor of. And it was like lightning. It stuck to me. It knocked me down, picked me up, and made me who I am. And I stayed with Martin Luther King and with the movement ever since, and I denied myself everything else that I came across, including the music industry. I was a singer, and at 16 years old, I was on the Howard Theater stage with Gladys Knight and other stars. I can't remember everybody, but it was an amazing young life. But then I ran into the same kind of racism in the industry, in the music industry, and I couldn't take it, and I wouldn't take it. And as a result, I backed off and didn't stay in there. I came up with Marvin Gaye and Van McCoy. We went singing together in groups and individually in Washington. We were entertainers, but I couldn't deal with the lifestyle and the things that were going on. And I've been such a rebellious individual till I knew it wasn't going to work, not for me. And as I grew through the civil rights movement, and with Dr. King in particular, and I started doing voter registration under SCLC and went into South Carolina and Virginia and Alabama and Georgia and the places that Dr. King would have us go to register black people to vote, in a time when they were killing us, beating us to death, and putting us in jail for even attempting to register to vote. And of course, that era just fired my belief and my commitment to fight this battle. and as Dr. King taught us, and it sticks with me today, that we have a spiritual and a moral obligation not to cooperate with our own demise. And as we speak today, too many of us are cooperating with the enemy and not standing up to address the issues that directly affect us, our families, and our future. So for those reasons, I've been involved with the movement and just done everything I possibly could to get us to see the light, see who we are, know who we are,
right,
and know the power that we have as the first man. You know, I even wrote a song called First Man that tells us, you know, who created us in his image. We're the ones who had the responsibility and still do have the responsibility to save this planet from the ones,
yeah,
who came to kill, steal, and destroy. They're the same people doing the same thing. And, you know, that has been my legacy, and I just won't let it go. I walked away from a lot of things in order to do this, and it has been a journey. You know, it's been a tremendous journey,
mm-hmm,
and I'm just grateful that there are people who are coming along like yourself and others who have the same commitment to doing something about our condition, knowing who we are and the power that we have. We've got to organize ourselves, come together, and utilize the power and change the condition.
Right.
You know, and I.
That's true.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it in a nutshell. We can go through, you know.
Okay. Now you say you met Dr. King through your brother, Church. Is that when you started to drive? How did you get to be his driver?
Oh, just being there. Just being there.
Just be at the right place at the right time.
Well, you know, the meetings, a lot of the meetings were held at our church. You know, I grew up in that,
okay,
church. And when,
okay,
Dr. King would come to town, they'd have a meeting, he'd be right there in the church, and I'm right there with him.
It was you.
And, you know,
okay,
being his right-hand man's son, our brother, then, you know,
mm-hmm,
it was a natural thing. Raymond, come on, go with me, Raymond. Raymond, can we take me?
Okay.
One of the things that's so important, just so as a laugh, is that one day, Dr. King, that was in 1965, I believe it was, Dr. King was at the airport, and my brother called me and asked me if I would, one, pick him up, take him to the airport, deliver him, you know, so he was in a meeting in Washington. So I did. But my brother called me at about 4 o'clock, something like that. And Dr. King had to be to the airport at 5. And so that wasn't a problem. I had a brand new car. I had a brand new 1965 Mustang convertible. Hot stuff.
Oh, you were hot.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had a big-time job. I was working at the State Department and all those things. And so I came to pick him up, and I had to sit and wait for him. And he was a half hour late coming out. And I sat there and waited. And he came out with his aide. They got in the car. We said, okay, we have to go to Dulles Airport. And I don't know if you know anything about Washington, but Dulles Airport is about a half hour, 40 minutes outside of D.C. in rush hour traffic. You know, that's almost impossible. So he got in the car and said, well, let's go. So I'm being a nice guy, new car, trying to hit Dr. King, so I'm being respectful, and I'm doing the speed limit. At some points I wasn't doing the speed limit, under the speed limit. So Dr. King reached,
mm-hmm,
over and said, Raymond, we'll never get to the airport on time if you're going to do the speed limit. So I said, well, that's all
right.
I want to hear you say, Doc. I put my foot in the tank. And we hit that Dulles Parkway, and I hit 110 miles an hour. And Dr. King said, oh, hold up, Raymond. He said, slow this thing down. I'd rather be Dr. King late than the late Dr. King. So I slowed down. We got there. Got there at 5 minutes to 6, and once we got there, the plane was an hour late. It was late. You know, I don't remember exactly how late it was, but it was late.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I really knew who Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was. When we pulled up into that airport, there were thousands of white people standing waiting for him to get out of his car. I was shocked. I couldn't believe my eyes. I said, whoa, mm-hmm. what is this? I just knew the impact that he had had around the world for the things that he was doing. And mm-hmm. that was my first time. So that's kind of a history that...
Now,
mm-hmm.
How was the atmosphere with the white people that was waiting there? I mean, were these people waiting to greet him, or were they hostile? What was the attitude of the folks?
They were waiting to greet him. They were clamoring to reach, touch him, to shake his hand. They were commending him. Mm-hmm. I said, whoa, look here, cheering him. And I said, whoa.
Okay.
I mean, it was just awesome. You know, unlike these were foreigners, okay, in the South that we've been running into. No, these were foreigners. This was the Dulles International Airport. You know, they were very excited about this, which excited us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So that made the difference. They were foreign white people that was there greeting him. International.
Yeah. That's what convinced me that, and I contend this, that it's not black versus white. It's wrong versus mm-hmm. right. Every brother ain't a brother. Every white man ain't your enemy. These people, mm-hmm. as a lot of them have throughout our time, have given their lives to fight with and for us. We can go all the way back to John Brown if you want, and beyond. So it's not about race. The enemy makes it like it's race to divide the people, the whites from the blacks, to keep us fighting each other. We were even divided among ourselves to keep us fighting each other. So we've got to overcome all these things, and we have, and we are. And that's what, that's where I committed myself to doing. Mm-hmm. I don't have any animosity towards other people except those who have animosity towards me. I'm not going to be naive to the point where I don't know that there are people out there who would do anything to get rid of us. And I'm not ashamed or afraid of the fact that they live and they do what they do, mm-hmm. and they are who they are. But we are who we are too, you know.
And that's what we need to focus on now, who we are. That's where our focus needs to be on at this point. So we're not fighting individuals. We're fighting a system. And that's where the racism is, the system.
Yes, it's a spiritual warfare. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. We need to know that. This is a spiritual warfare. We're fighting the enemy of God and the enemy of mankind. Still exist, mm-hmm. and they are here right now doing the same thing they've always done, kill, steal, and destroy.
Okay. Now, by you being, we're going to stay on Dr. Martin Luther King for a minute. Now, by you being his driver when he came into town, can you kind of give us a little insight on his personality, how he was?
Well, he was funny. He was human. He was a man. You know, it was a joy to be around him, because, I mean, we always have jokes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
He gets serious, of course, at times, and even he broke down to cry at times, depending on what was going on. One day I had to take him to a rally here in D.C. I took him to a rally, and just church, and church was packed, of course. Came out, he got in the back of the car. We were in a limousine at that time, and we had Cara Belafonte, and I don't remember everybody was in the car that night, but it was Cara Belafonte, and I'm not sure if it was Sammy Davis, but Walter, myself, and I can't remember somebody. Everybody was in there. But when he got in the car,
that's all right, yeah.
He started crying. He was had his head down, he was crying. And Harry asked him, he said, "Doc, why are you crying?" And what he was crying about, and he found out later, that the black minister, the ministers that he thought he was working with, some of them have turned against him and voiced that in that meeting. Mm-hmm. And it hurt him. you know. And hey, I mean, it's true.
I can imagine. And that was, yeah.
Well, it happens right now. We have the same problem today, you know. And like I said, it ain't black and white, y'all. It's wrong and right. Every brother ain't a brother,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
The love of money has separated us in many ways. And the enemy has bought off a lot of our so-called leaders or ministers or, you know, people in position that could help us, but they're helping themselves. And that still goes on.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was going on then. But, you know, we overcame all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He did, I should say.
Okay.
Because
mm-hmm.
he had such a love for God and a love for mankind, for his brothers and his sisters and his family. You know, he was a lovable man. There's no question. He was different. I mean, when you get around him, you could just feel it, you know. Yes,
okay.
He was a man.
He was real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people, he smokes cigarettes. Yes, he shot a fool. He's one of the best pool shooters you could find. He'd go in the pool room and clean up.
Okay.
And wipe them out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when a person get a lot of attention, some people, well, as they say, might get the big head or they get beside themselves. But he seemed like he was really what we call a down-to-earth person.
Absolutely. He definitely was. And he was a people person. He was for the people.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I was ever exposed to a church, where you did not have to have a shirt, suit, a tie, or hat, or, you know, a dress or a hat on your head and all of that, where people came to worship in their jeans and their coveralls, some with no shoes, that kind of thing, you know. That was my first time
mm-hmm.
witnessing that. I mean, it was so impressionable. It really hit my heart, you know, and I've always thought about that, you know. We didn't know that existed because I grew up in Washington, D.C., where we was proper. You know, we had his shoots, sir, tie, you know, all of that. And we went and sang those good old spiritual songs written by the white folks, you know. We didn't even
mm-hmm.
do our own gospel songs. So, yeah,
right.
he was a very personable person, yeah, no question.
Okay. So, now, what do you think, I know that he knew that he was going up against the beast, this monster, the system. And so did he know that his life was, you know, could end any time? Did he have that feeling? Did he talk about it? Or, you know, he was dealing with some.
You know, I don't
there.
Think so. Brother. I don't think so. I think he thought, and I said this to him. You know, I said one day,
mm-hmm.
I said, Doc, I think you think these people have a soul. If they don't have a soul.
Mm-hmm.
How could they have a soul and do the things that they do? You know, so I don't think that he thought that in the beginning. You know, I thought he thought that being a Christian and being a minister and that we should love everybody and, you know, all those things that he taught. And then one day he woke up. He said, wait a minute. I think I'm getting my people into a burning house. You know, these people are wicked, man. You know, after
mm-hmm.
the Vietnam and after he spoke out about the Vietnam situation and began
mm-hmm.
to organize, he went into Chicago and got, you know, treated the way he did there. It was worse than the treatment they got down south. I mean, it was horrible then, during those times. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it woke him up. So when he did wake up and figure this thing out, that's when they turned on when he went against this war in Vietnam and all the wars like we are doing today, all these wars
mm-hmm.
that they're creating so that these white men can take over these countries and take their natural resources. That's what that was all about. You know, all those wars that were fought by black men as well for these white men to take over these countries and take their natural resources and form all these corporations that run this country today. So, you know, he was on top of that, you know. That's why they took him out, I'm pretty sure. That's
mm-hmm.
why they took him out, particularly after he and Malcolm got together. Because, you know, that
that's
was a separation
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
so
after they, you know,
starts.
Malcolm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say this, Malcolm, I met Malcolm around the same time I met Dr. King. Malcolm, the mosque is right around the corner from my high school, Dunbar High School in Washington. The mosque is right on New Jersey Avenue. And I would have to pass it every day, going to school and coming home. And I went in to one time to see what these people are talking about, because they were different from the churches I've been going to, you know, so it was a lot different. But Malcolm had another idea, and when I listened to him today, and as I listened to him throughout the years, he had it right. But so did Elijah Muhammad. Elijah Muhammad had it right, you know, but the division kept us from working together and achieving what we are about to achieve now. You know, the system would pit them against each other, and Malcolm would call Dr. King a handkerchief-head nigger. A handkerchief-head preacher. And, you know, that's what it was. You know, we had two different philosophies until they both woke up. You know, what rang Malcolm's bell? Oh, I know what rang Malcolm's bell. But when he woke up and went over to Mecca and came back, he saw Dr. King. They stayed together for 3 days in a hotel in New York at the Teresa, and they got to know each other, and they got to love each other, understand their philosophies, and they came out together, you know, and that scared the hell out of the system.
That was power, and it did
bring us together. And they've had to work hard to keep us separated, to keep us at each other, you know. So they've thrown everything they can at us, and they've killed a lot of our leaders, and a lot of our people who've stood up have been wiped out, you know, and a lot of them didn't have the notoriety Malcolm or Dr. King had. And then they started manufacturing their leaders for us, you know, and they tricked us into believing that we could vote our way into that system. It's not our system, it's their system. We need our own people, you know, and that's what we're trying to do. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to use that word try. That's what we are doing.
We are doing, yes.
Yes,
now,
we are.
How did you get into the SCLC? You were the president, wasn't
you? That's another. No, I was president of the Dade County chapter in Miami, in Miami, Florida. That didn't happen until 1979, I think it was, when I moved to Miami from Washington. But, that was the experience of doing that, because when I moved to Miami, it was like going into another era, another century or whatever. I mean, people were so far behind when I got there, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And then the Haitian thing came, and they were bringing all these black folk in off the ocean in chains and taking them straight to the concentration camp. I couldn't believe that. I said, whoa, and nobody was saying anything or doing anything about it, you know. And here I came from that era where we did something about everything that we could, but nobody was moving. And then I realized that as I stayed in there, I didn't go to stay, by the way. I came to Miami just for a break. Some bad experiences in Washington in business, and I decided to take a break. And I moved here with my family, and that was the beginning of my, real experience here. I never had what was happening here to happen, with the invasion of the Cubans that they brought in by the millions, 150,000 in one. And took it over. All of them were white, and they took over. And it took to, not only did they take over the city, but they took over the position of the white man. They did the same thing that the whites were doing to us all along. They had the attitudes, and they still do. And they were set up. And they were given money to stay in position. They were, you know, it was a takeover completely. It was an invasion, there was no opposition to it. And I said, wait a minute, we can't sit back and allow this. I mean, just our blood, sweat, and tears are in this soil. You know, this is our land, and we can't sit back and act like we can't do anything about it. So that's kind of why I got stuck and started the SCLC here. I had been appointed the executive secretary for the NAACP that first second week I was here. And it was a fluke, but, you know, they found out that I was Walter's brother, and, man, they thought they had another, you know, another slave master. I said, hell no, I ain't the one. But, you know, when those things didn't work, and people came to me and they said, please don't leave, because I had to stand up a couple times and against what was going on, and it happened to be against the people who were in control of the NAACP at the time. And I stood up and they asked me to leave. So I did. Mm-hmm. And the other people came to me and said, please don't leave. We need somebody who can stand up to these people with us. So that's how I started with SPLC, and I started a chapter, became the president, and stayed and worked for 20 years doing that without support of the people, because our people have lost our minds. We don't support our own causes. You know, we wonder why people can come into our communities from countries and own everything and have the create their own economic engine, and we haven't created our own. You know, so there's a lot that goes along with how we've gotten to where we are and how we're changing it.
And so you got to see firsthand by you being a part of the activists with the SCLC, you got the chance to see exactly where the problem is at, where the breakdown is at. And so, you know, it seems like it's a pattern. It don't seem like things change. It's like they're doing the same thing over again. So if you've been through it, now you are able to correct it or be able to maneuver without making the same mistakes as before. Well, I wouldn't say mistakes, without, you know, knowing how to get around things where things that had stopped you before or interfered with the progress.
Yeah. What I've learned over these years is that if we are the problem, then we are the solution. And the problem has been that we refuse to work together and come together. So we allow ourselves to be separated, and we help the enemy oppress us. I started this back in the 80s. Christmas is coming. Hold your money. In other words, stop spending your money with the people who are oppressing you. So every Christmas, I realized as a young man, before I even came to Miami, that every Christmas I was still paying for the last Christmas. You know, they had this little trick they got, $10 a month, you get anything you want, and you never stop paying for it. So I stopped. I said, hold up. I ain't buying no more Christmas stuff. We ain't doing that no more. Ain't no white boys coming down my chimney with no bag or nothing, because I don't even have a chimney. So, you know, I started teaching my children that we ain't doing that one no more. And I was, grew into saying that to everybody, y'all. We keep supporting and making rich the rich who keep their knee on our neck. Okay, so we need to turn that money into our own community, create our own businesses, create our own economic engine. And what I used to do as president, I used to be here in Miami, I used to show movies on the weekends to the kids. And one of the movies that I would show was Do the Right Thing. And I would explain to the children that movie, did you understand what that was all about? And I would ask them to respond to what they saw. And they didn't catch on for a while till I started showing them. It was all because these white folks had a pizza parlor in the black community and refused to acknowledge black entertainers, but all of the, you know, entertainers on their wall in their restaurant were white entertainers. So what happened to the black entertainers? Where was Pat Cole? Where was Sammy Davis? You know, where was Kim Weston? Where were the black entertainers? None of them were in those stores. So that's what it was all about. And people start complaining about it, and you know, and then the riot started, and after that, nothing changed. So I'm just saying, and I've had this argument with other leaders in other communities about this. We've had riots in our communities, and after the riots, they're tearing down the community and burning it up and all, and we still didn't open our own businesses. I don't understand that. And I had that conversation with some of your ministers up there in Detroit. It was really confusing to me and frustrating. I walked up to what came, and the first time I went into to Detroit and saw the burnout buildings 10 years after, 15 years after, I couldn't believe them. And we still don't have any businesses up in here. And it's our fault. It's our fault because we refuse to put our money into our own community and build our own community and build a future for our children. You know, everybody's not going to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, chief and go to the biggest college in town. You know, that ain't going to happen. It's too expensive now. But everybody can work.
Right.
Everybody can think, you know.
That's
and we can take
and I
charge.
Remember, I remember when Dr. Claude Anderson was here, and he was trying to get things together to open up a fish market because, you know, we love fish. And he couldn't do it. I mean, he went to the city hall. He went to, but he went to the system to try to get the system to help us to do this. And the system is not going to do that. And soon as he left, the Arabs opened up all the fish markets all over the place here in Detroit. And making good gobs of money. Well, we should have did that, got the money together ourselves and opened up our own fish markets.
And we could have.
We couldn't get no...
Elijah Muhammad was doing it. Why couldn't we all come together and do something like that? You know, what's the problem here? You know, and yes, if the system takes advantage of our ignorance, but our people are perishing for a lack of knowledge. We refuse to come together and understand this thing, okay? So what the system does, and I can, you know, you come to Miami, you can see it. It's clear. You got to speak Spanish here to work in these places down here because they own it all. And they got the money from our government with our tax money. The government gave these immigrants the money to open these businesses and finance them and set them up. They're still doing it. And unfortunately, this president is suggesting the same thing, $450,000 per family. Get out of here. That's our money. That's our tax money. That's
our
blood.
And we got people all, and we have all these homeless people on the street. But he should have been giving that to the homeless people that's on the street.
Because,
but, you know.
So what do we do? So what do we do to change this? You know it's wrong. We know who's doing it. You know, are we afraid of them? And I think that's what the problem is. We're afraid to speak up and afraid to do anything about it. You know, yes, they have the power. They got the guns. They got the weapons, the bombs, the satellites, all that stuff. They got all the... all those weapons of mass destruction they have, it's their weapon, okay? But they don't have our weapon, okay? And it's like I said, it's a spiritual war. Okay? They do not have a spiritual weapon. We do. We have to learn to use it, okay? So we got to organize ourselves and come together, or we won't be here. They're taking everything they can away from us. They're killing us as the process. You know, how you come here, land on Plymouth Rock, and as Malcolm said, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. That means we were already here when they got here. Okay, but they told us that Columbus discovered America. That's a lie, a big lie. But we know they came to kill, steal, and destroy. We know who they are. We know they're liars. You know, so and they're big liars. But we continue to accept and whatever they say to us is right, and that's wrong. You know, we've got to wake up. We have to come together. You know, we always wonder why the entertainers and the sports stars and all of those don't come together and put some money up to do something. Well, they're being misled and misguided, and they're being misled and misguided by the leaders that have been put in place by the system to do just that, mislead us.
That also, you know, the leaders, so-called leaders that, you know, look like you and I, you know, they don't have no worry about any repercussion or, you know, from us. You know, it's like, okay, I'll go in and I'll do the dirty work. I'll do this and I'll do that. They're not worried about, you know, have to suffer the consequences, because if they did, they wouldn't take that position.
Well, we've been miseducated. Again, we get miseducated every Sunday, 11 o'clock. We get miseducated, you know. And the people believe the miseducation. They never stop and think about, you know, they don't know their history because they've never been taught their history. They've been lied to.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Christopher Columbus discovered America. Get out of here. How are you going to discover something with us already here? This is ours. This is our land. This land here called America is ours. You know, and we have to know that. But we don't, because we've been lied to, not only by the enemy, but by our own people.
Exactly.
Young people now who know the difference, and they're trying to teach it. But we are not organized yet to do that. Or we're doing the best we can with what we have. Let me put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing the best we can with what we have. But we have to learn to support our own cause. These young people ought to have the same opportunity that anybody has to teach. But the people in control of this government make sure that the people they want to control have everything they need. You know, they got the colleges, they have the curriculums, they set their own curriculums up. They don't teach what we know the truth to be, and we have to teach that. So we must establish our own institutions, raise our own money, finance our own schools, and teach the truth to our children. We're not doing that. So you're getting the result of what the enemy wants us to do, and that is to turn against each other, turn on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. But like you say, that's our responsibility, because other races, they have their own schools, or even if our child have to go, don't have to, but even if they do go to their system of schooling, I mean, we should have, if they go after school, that we still teach them what they need to know. So that way they can see the difference. And I think this is an excellent time, because a lot of children, the homeschooling, a lot of children are not going to school. They want to give them shots. So, you know, instead of focus on all of that destruction that they're doing, this is an excellent time for us to educate our own children.
And we're not doing that. We need to do it. We need
That's
to stop
right.
talking
right.
about it and do it.
And
you
do
know,
it.
And
the
brothers, we got to stop. We got to stop reacting to what they're doing to us. You know, I'm not going to take a shot from in it. I certainly wouldn't take it from no Nazi. I certainly wouldn't take it if they're not telling me what's in it. What is this? What's in it? And I said, well, you can't tell us, and we'll sue you. You know, it's against the law. You know, give me a break. What law? Whose law?
What law?
It's not our law. It's
right.
It's not God's law. You know, we live
That's
by
right.
God's law. We do unto others as we'd have them do unto, you know, to me. Do unto others as they do unto us. And we're not doing that. We're doing whatever they tell us to do and then complaining about the outcome. You know, and then let them hide it, because they control and own everything. They own the press. They own, you know, everything that we need, they own. And that was their design to start. You know, they forgot the one thing. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, and those that dwell therein. But we are sleeping at the switch. We got to wake up.
And their system and control is dealing with finances. So we already see that works when you cut the finance off. Just like now, the truckers are over, they shutting the place down over there. You know, so when the foreigners moved into the neighborhood, it did the same thing here, but it was with the Arabs. You know, why was it that we didn't go and stand in front of those shops and stop people from coming in, offer them rides to go somewhere else? To, you know, you have to have a plan, and then you have to work your plan. Nobody coming into those shops, they wouldn't have been making no money. They couldn't have stayed in a neighborhood.
Right now, we could do the same thing right this minute. But we run and support everybody but our own right now. So we know that that's what happened in the past. So why are we still doing that? Why are we still financing people who, you know? So it's on us. It's on us.
Mm-hmm.
It really is on us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking all this smack, but ain't doing nothing.
Right.
You know, it ain't what you say, it's what you do. They, you know. We can talk forever, but we ain't doing nothing about it. You know, you get
what
you deserve. Yeah, absolutely, positively. I had the opportunity one time.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I had the opportunity to confront a U.S. congressman here in Miami, a female black woman, and in a community meeting where she stood up and had the audacity to say that Africa needs our help. Africa is poor and it's broken. I had to stand up in the back of the auditorium. They refused to acknowledge me to the people. Said, you got to hear what Mr. Fornter is trying to say. And they stopped and they had to hear what I had to say. And I said this to them. How are you telling these people that Africa is poor when 90% of everything that we build in this country, the ore and the mineral come out of Africa? Everything that we build comes out of Africa. If they're poor because you're stealing their natural resources, killing their leaders, and taking over their country. So tell the truth to the people. But, you know, the people couldn't understand that at the time. They're waking up now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it is. They just did this. They're doing it right now in Africa as we speak with these cell phones. They're doing it right now. Same people doing the same thing. Okay, and we're still talking about it.
That's right. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put some music on, and when we come back, I'm going to open up the lines, but I also want to talk about the drums that you do also for now and some of the solutions here. So we'll be back in 3 minutes.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Hey, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will.
are listening to Raymond Funtroy and on Truth to Power. And the number to call in is 323-642-1586 and push the number 1 if you have a question or a comment. And, you know, it's not too often that you have this opportunity. This is living history. I mean, this is not something that you can read in a book that somebody else wrote to tell you about our history. You are getting it from someone that was there when the history was being made. So this is very important. And I do feel like that we are the change. We have to make the change. And I feel like that the elders and the young people, when they get together, that's like Martin and Malcolm coming together. That is power right there. And I'm looking at our young people today, and they are brilliant, you know. And so I'm just seeing here where we are definitely not just talking the talk, we're walking the walk, and that's what it's about. And I just want to say again, Mr. Funroy, I just want to say thank you for your contribution that you have made over the years.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on the show, mm-hmm. and I pray that your listeners
honor to have you.
Will not just listen to what you're doing and what you're saying, but support what you're doing. Support the movement. We're going to give you information. We're going to give you direction to do it. You have to follow it. You know, mm-hmm. you have to hitchhike a ride off of our experience, and you have to do these things that we suggest to help you get through. Otherwise, you're going to fall into the same trap that my generation fell into, and it's why we are where we are today. But there have been those, and are those right now, who have benefited for community. For the purpose of community, and not necessarily for themselves, but for all of us. And we need to support that whole idea of unity and, mm-hmm. and self-sufficiency.
So can you tell us some of the things that you see that we need to do and what you are doing today to start that walk?
Well, as you mentioned,
start that
the
march.
The Drumbeat mm-hmm. Coalition. I got struck by a 5G frequency back in February of last year. It's changed my life. Believe me, I've had to struggle to stay afloat, stay alive. Really, it's been a very difficult mm-hmm. year, the most difficult year of my life. But I have overcome, thanks to the Creator, and I thank God for it, because it was God that mm-hmm. brought me through. And it changes you.
Because you're not finished. Your work is not finished. Go ahead.
I believe that. And I'm going to do as much as I can while I can. But after that hit, I was on the phone with my brother when it happened. And it was very strange. But a year later, I'm still recovering from it. Mm-hmm. And it's been a real struggle, but okay, I'm through and I'm grateful. But what came out?
Now, before you move on, can you tell us what was the experience? Because other people might get hit by that 5G, and they can kind of know what's going on.
Well, they are getting hit by it, and it's not common knowledge because we're not talking about it. We're just thinking of people are sick, and they got this and they got that, but. You know, I was raised under with the direction of Dick Gregory and Dr. Alvenia Fulton and Dr. Sabi and others, you know, in the natural healing realm. Dr. David Imhotep, you may know him for his books. Mm-hmm. I always listened to them and followed whatever they were teaching. And so I was very healthy for a long time until this happened and things changed. I mean, it changed my appearance. It's changed my thought patterns. it's weakened me, but, you know, I'm able to walk and come through. I couldn't walk for months. I was, you know, I could have given up and just, you know, disappeared. And I did for a while. I didn't say anything. I wasn't vocal at all. Lost my voice. And, you know, these things happened to me as a result of that. So now I'm hearing other people are having similar problems and that they're being struck by this thing. How is it happening? Mm-hmm. It came through my telephone, or my cell phone,
mm-hmm.
and I was sitting here on my balcony. I was sitting in my living room overlooking the street, and there are wires across the street from my apartment where hundreds, thousands of birds will perch in the evenings. They would fly in there, perch on, and all kinds of birds, parrots, parakeets, you know, crows, all birds. It was amazing, you know, when I first came here. It was amazing. It was one of the things I liked about down here. You know, you get that kind of seasons where these birds are just visible. And we had coconut trees and palm trees and all the things that birds love, and you got them here. So I would sit here and admire them in the evening. But this particular day in February last year, I said, wait a minute, I haven't seen any birds out here for a few days. What's going on? And I start thinking about it, and I'm sitting there talking to my brother. I said, you know, Walter, I said, there are not any birds out here, and there's always birds on these wires at this time in the day. And while I'm going, shock came through my phone, and the next thing I knew, I was on the floor and writhing in pain, burning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my brother got very shook up about it and called my son, who came to get me to find out what was going on, and wound up taking me to his home where I stayed. I've been there for almost the entire year because I was very ill. Very sick, and I couldn't walk, and disarrayed, really. So that people don't believe it when they hear it that way. Oh, something's wrong with him, you know, is what the response has been.
True.
But now I'm finding out that more and more people are having these kinds of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But I had been one of those. As a matter of fact, I believe I was the first one. I don't know if others have done it since. But we forced the system to take an antenna down here in Miami, one of those 200 feet microwave antennas. We forced them down to take it down because we got the information, the federal information about these antennas, and we began to protest them. And we went to the Florida Commission on the Environment to protest and ask them to remove this antenna from the community because of what it causes in the community. We proved it with their reports from the U.S. Navy and federal government. And so the commission, we went to the commission, and the commission told us, he said, Mr. Fauntroy, we cannot. We asked them to put the antennas out in the bay, away from the population, because we're right in the middle of the heart of the black community, right across the street from a building that I had purchased to do my work. You know, I was going to establish an economic base. I taught young people how to create their own businesses and how to I did it through a thrift store. I opened a thrift store and taught them how to buy and sell, how to prepare the clothes and how to present them, all of that. I had over 300 kids that I taught without government input. I think that upset some folks, but we didn't need them. Everything was free. You know, the clothing was free that came, and all we had to do was teach what we already knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't have to go to the college to learn how to, you know, to change money, that kind of thing. Well, after that happened, we went to that commission, and they told us, well, we cannot put them in the bay because of the ordinance on the books in the state of Florida that would not allow us to put antennas in the bay because it would harm the fish. And when
it's okay
said
to
that,
harm the people.
The whole, oh, it was the black people because it was in the black community, wasn't it?
Right. right.
So the audience went, oh, they had a great sigh over there, and they stood up and looked around. So I had two women with me who came to that commission meeting with me, and I asked them, I said, time for us to leave. We left, and we immediately went to our office, and we started making flyers and placards and stood out there on that evening. We stood in the rush hour traffic asking to call their senators, call their commissioners, and protest these antennas because they are killing us. They create cancer, they create leukemia, they create mind control, and they know that this is happening, but they're not going to do anything about it. So we went out and did that, passed it out, and the commission revoked their permit to pull the antennas up and made them take it down. Well, after that, the system came to call me to a meeting and offered me all this money to shut up and not stop talking about the antennas, which I refused to do, and offered to purchase my building, give me the money, and then give me the building back. You know, I said, thank you, but no, thank you. It's not about me. It's about this community. It's not about our people. Mm-hmm. Well, our illustrious Congress, and led by a congresswoman from this district,
What was her name?
Well, she's dead and gone now.
She just passed this year.
She was 95 years old when she passed. And she admitted to me in front of people that I knew what I was doing, and people should listen to me, but it was too late, you know, mm-hmm. for that. She was mm-hmm. in the Congress at mm-hmm. the time when she said that. But, you know, I had 44 break-ins in my property, in my building, after that, and I lost the property to foreclosure because my tenants stopped paying, and I couldn't make my monthlies, and, you know, there was no place for us to go, mm-hmm. for me to go to get, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. to get assistance. Matter of fact, $1,000 to save $300,000, and I couldn't get it anywhere. And I'd exhausted everything. I tried everything. I went to the churches. They told me go to the bank. And, you know, the banks when they were redlining us clearly at that time. I said, how you to send me to a bank when you know they're redlining our people? Mm-hmm. We cannot get loans that they give others. You know, and they are not repaid. And you know, Bank of America. I don't have no problem with Bank of America. Wells Fargo, I can't remember all them banks at the time, but they were all mm-hmm. It was Eastern Bank at the time. All of them owned and controlled by the same people, and they did the same thing to black people. They didn't do it to others.
They part of the system.
Absolutely. But my Chinese friend, who I used to buy some of my herbs from, told me, he said, Ray, if you were Chinese, he said, I could take you to the council tonight. And you would come out there with $200,000 cash dollars tonight with what you have. See, that's, he said, why don't your people do that? I said, I've been trying to get us to do it, but we won't, you know, it's a distrust thing, you know, and it's a result of what we went through in this country. You know, it's the result of slavery and the denial that we've gone through, the whole Willie Lynch mentality that our people have been subjected to. And that's why when I went to the black people, I know had money. They laughed at me, my dad's in my face. And that goes up the line, right? You know, up the line. So that's what happened. And as a result, today, we don't own anything. You know, we don't own the gas station. We did everything we could. We said to the people after the oil spill in 2010 and before that, before the oil spill, I had a campaign to buy black gas or don't buy gas at all. Now go to the black stations and identify a few black stations that we had at that time. And the people followed it. It was working pretty good. And then the oil spill came, and we proved, we had a website, and we proved that the oil spill was no accident. It was on purpose. And, of course, they've cut all the facts out. They didn't let me see that. And they certainly ain't going to let you see that it was us that did it, that exposed it. you know, that did the research and exposed what was going on. And and of course, we asked the people then to stop buying BP gas, because these British were behind. The colonizers were behind, and they were attacking the American, not just black folk, but American. And the white boys are just too white to understand, still too white to understand what's going on, because they're losing, have lost the land, the country, if you will, because they, you know, they refuse to understand. And as I've always said, what's good for black folk is good for everybody. And they have violated God's law by treating us the way they have treated us, because they've lied on us and not told the people who we are, and they know. And unfortunately, we don't know, and that's what we're doing, is teaching our people now who we are. And once we know that, and we take a stand, come together, you know, peace is back. We'll get our peace back. It'll be like it's supposed to be. But again, it's going to be a battle of spiritual warfare. And we're going to win this warfare, so we just got to fight it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just like your Asian friend, they did the same thing here in Detroit with the Arabs. You know, they couldn't get, some of them couldn't get money from the bank, but they had this group, whatever they formed, and that's, they had their own bank. They went to their people, and their people, you know, gave them the money. They didn't have to go through to the banks to get the money.
To the European banks, the white banks, the Rockefeller banks.
They didn't have to go to them. Yeah, they went to their people. You know, they had money. It was two, three guys that money, and they funded everything.
And when they start doing
that,
we got to
do that.
Change. Yeah, we have to do it. And there are places that are being, that's being done, but they need, we need to come together and do it all over. We need to, you know, to organize ourselves and make sure, build our city and build up our economic base. And not for against anybody, but for ourselves,
for ourselves. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, we don't have time to fight somebody to stop them from taking care of themselves. You know, we're not doing that. We're not against other people, but we have to be for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, before I open the lines up, can you tell us about the drumming?
Oh, I was about to tell you. Well, so in February, after we after that happened, I have been getting these wake up calls 3 o'clock in the morning forever, and I never followed up on them. I'd get them and I think about it, but that was it. But one morning in February, I got this wake up call 3 o'clock, and it said drum. I said drum. What do you mean drum? It said drum. I thought about it. I prayed about it, and that day it came to me that our ancestors used the drum to communicate with one another. They used the drum to communicate with God. They would drum and pray and communicate. And I said, let me test this. Let me call some people. So I started calling my friends and people I knew. I knew a few people who were real avid drummers. And every one of them said, yes, that's the answer. And they really did. They were very enthused about it. So we started that in February of last year. And today, it's around the world. We started here in Miami. It started out with the state of Florida, and it started going throughout the United States. So we did a synchronized drum, 12 noon Sundays, Eastern Standard Time. So it has started, and they start picking it up, and then the Native American groups, tribes, start picking it up. And then from them, it grew, and it went into Africa, on the west coast of Africa, my friends in Cote d'Ivoire and Ivory Coast, Ghana and you know, Sierra Leone, right on down the west coast of Africa. And now it's into the interior of Africa. It's going to get all over. It is, if not already, all over Africa. And a synchronized time, which is a different time in each country, in each city, that people are drumming and praying. So what we did, and because I had so much reverence for Lift Every Voice and Sing, and because the second person I heard sing Lift Every Voice was Kim Weston, And I met her and heard her at a SCLC convention in Washington back in the 60s. And I said, let me call her and find out. And so I got her number from a friend, called her and said, and told her what I thought. I think that since she is the second person to record that song, it makes her an icon. She's an icon in the movement, in the human rights movement, because we want people to learn, lift every voice and sing. And it would be perfect for her to be the icon for that song and for that idea to teach, lift every voice and sing. And I had I also am a singer, so I had the opportunity to sing it at the first annual Grandparents Day at the Capitol in Washington, D.C. back in the 90s.
Okay.
And they asked me to sing the national anthem, which I did. Immediately following the national anthem, I sang Lift Every Voice and Sing. And it shocked the community because it was an audience of congressmen and senators and, you know, dignitaries or whatever. And they were shocked. As a matter of fact, the redneck got upset because I had done that. But some of the whites, including his name's going to come to me in a minute, came up to me and said, listen, I like that song. The way I said, well, it's a Negro spiritual written by, you know, black men. And it shows the difference between dropping bombs on people, bombs bursting in the air, and the love of God that the Negro National Anthem presents. They agreed, and they liked it. And Pat Boone, that was his name, Pat came over to me and offered me a deal with his record company.
Mm-hmm.
That was sabotaged later, and it never came off. But anyway, there are people who understand the spiritual meaning of what's going on here. And so when I thought about it and I called Kim and she agreed, I said, okay, let's do this thing, you know. And so we've been working on it, and we do it without finance, and that's the problem that we have. That our people have refused to finance our own cause and our own movement. And it makes it difficult, and I refuse to beg, and I refuse absolutely positively to go to Coca-Cola, Budweiser, and all those corporations to ask them for anything that we could free ourselves. If we're going to free ourselves, we're going to free ourselves so we finance our own cause. And I believe that,
right.
And I pray that, it's the only way to do it, no other way. Whoever controls your sustenance controls your will. And when you take money from people, you're going to do what they tell you to do. And I say thank you, but no thank you. You open up the door, I'll get it myself. James Brown.
Yes. All right.
If you don't open
it, gonna kick it in.
If you don't open it up, you're gonna kick it down.
That's
that
right. Okay. Let me open this line up. So family, we know that at 12 o'clock noon Eastern Standard Time, get your drums. Now, if you don't have a drum, go in your kitchen and get some of them pots and pans and a spoon and start beating on them at 12 o'clock. So we're going to do this. We're going to make this happen.
And we do have authentic djembe drums. We have 100 of them right now. Djembe drums made in Ghana. And you just have to call us. You know, call us. The office here at 786-389-3274. And that's just until we get organized. We're not where we want to be, but we're working on it and we're getting there. So, but we need your help.
Okay.
We need your support. And we do have a Cash App.
Okay.
The Cash App is in
What's
my
the
name
cash
at this time. It's Raymond Fauntroy. That's R-A-Y. M-O-N-D. And Fauntroy is F like Frank, A-U-N like Nancy, T like Thomas, R-O-Y. And we'll give these, those drums, if you, if those who are purchasing drums, we're giving drums to these young people who don't have them and who want them. And I hope that Sister Marie will call in because she's up in Massachusetts. And buddy, you got to hear her story about these drums. It's so enlightening and so she inspires us with it. And I hope that she can get in and share that.
Okay.
But yes, it's happening all over the world now. It's in Africa. It's in Central South America and Venezuela. Even in the Aborigines, even in Australia, drumming. So, and it was all word of mouth. You know, we didn't do the internet or none of that yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah,
the word of mouth is very powerful. We had that before it was any internet or telephone. So the word of mouth is very powerful. Okay, so for those that want to order them a drum. 786-389-3274, or you can go to Raymond Funtroy Cash App and order your drums. And that's 12 o'clock noon every Sunday. Okay, I'm going to open up 413-783. 413-783. Do you have your mute on? Okay. I'll move on.
Hotep and better love, Sister Bear.
Hotep, Kwame.
Can you hear?
Yes,
my brother.
The brother Ray Fauntleroy. Appreciate, love you, bro. I thank you for all that you are sharing. And it's really in divine order because tomorrow is February the 4th. February the 4th, 1965. Malcolm was in Selma, flew down to Selma, Alabama, because after the Bloody Sunday, and they were getting ready to march again, going to Montgomery. And he got up on the stage to present, but what Abernathy did was ran and he got Miss King and told Miss King that Malcolm was getting ready to speak. And she came there and other speakers were speaking and they sat there and they talked. And he told her, he says, if they don't let him out of jail, I'm going to lead this march across that bridge. And it ain't going to be a nice march. And you know that they let Dr. King out of that jail for him to do that march. And 19 days after he was there, February the 4th, 1965, the Audubon Ballroom on February 23rd, they assassinated me.
I didn't know that. And that's refreshing. And that is the truth.
And the other part that really is powerful, you're there in Miami. Sam played that song where Sam Cooke wrote that when he, Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, and Cassius Clay together. I mean, Cassius Clay and Malcolm X, because he hadn't changed over. And that was to do that fight that he was to do there, and he won. But Sam Cooke, through them all sitting there in the room, they made the movie about it.
Yeah,
I've seen that.
Night in Miami. And what he did was because there was a white group that had made a song that was really popular, and he wanted something to be just as powerful for our people, and that's when he wrote A Change Is Gonna Come.
We've
got to be able to know where we come from to know where we can go. And Brother Ray is dropping, just as Ms. Kim gave, their story, their truth from actuality. And these are the jewels that we need to start putting on these shows and being able to honor them, because we can archive and hear the actual voice of the person who did 110 miles an hour to get Dr. King to the airport. Yeah. You know, these are the missing pages of these memoirs that people will write. But these are the things that we hear on your show, Bev, of these historical moments that were lived by the people who were speaking that lived it. And so I'm grateful, and the drum call is very much important, because the thing is, like you said, is that the drum was the way that we talked, but the drum is also what we heard when we were in the womb of our mother's heart. That first
Amen.
Heartbeat was the first drum, the human drum, the beat of a mother's heart is what we're tuning back into. So
yeah,
thank you,
brother. That's very powerful.
I appreciate that, man.
Thank you.
You know, you're absolutely right. And we've got to preserve the knowledge of our people.
Right.
Well, I'm going to, we at the table here, at the round table, the mound table, excuse me. So I'm going to add somebody else here to the table. 404-453.
Hey, Sister Bell. Hey, Presidente, come on down to Brother Reed.
Yes, sir.
Hey,
God bless you, man.
God bless you too, Brother Reed. I just want to thank you for what you're doing, man. And after listening to our brother, what's his name, Khomeini or whatever, I had an epiphany what he was saying, man, but, about all this swirling and stuff going on, man. That used to piss me off, but the way he put it, Let all these stupid Negroes that swirl and let them go ahead, because they're doing us a favor. Because all the children are going to come out light-skinned with a natural. So it's all good, man. Let them go ahead. I was mad for first, but then I see that's another art of war right there, Brother Ray and the family. So
yes.
It's all good. I just had to throw that out. Some good news, man. Whatever they do is backfiring on them. We got them. Sister Bev, and I'll let y'all go continue. I want to hear my brother, Presidente El Comandante, Brother Ray. It's your time, man. I'll just listen.
All right.
Thank you for that, my brother. And I called him the general. He is the general. And we're going to need a general of this army to do what
mm-hmm.
they do.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the African-American National United? What is that?
Well, after I spent 20 years as president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in Miami and realized that things that I said to Dr. King after we left, I think it was Sandersville, Georgia. I'm not sure of the city. I believe it was that one. But after we left there, I said to Dr. King, and that was after I realized that church wasn't always about suit, shirt, and tie, and a hat, and a dress, that there were some real people. And I said to him, Doc, I don't think our people know who we are. I don't think they know who we are. And at that time, before I grew in knowledge, I said, we are African. You know, I don't think our people know that. And after I thought about that and throughout the years, and I ran into all of the difficulties of trying to do things through Southern Christian Leadership Conference and realized that our leadership had been compromised and we were not doing what Dr. King set out to do, I decided to start another organization, and I started the African American National United Foundation. I started it because I was looking for an acronym for ENOUGH, and it was ENOUGH is ENOUGH, that enough is enough. We can organize ourselves and change the condition which we are faced with. And, of course, I may have been a little ahead of my time, but that was 1999, I believe it was, when I started that. And, of course, the people didn't understand that, and we still, and to today, we still have not gotten financial support from our people. And I refused to take it from, the controllers. So I had to drop the organization. And I did because, I keeping it up myself and keeping paying all those fees and stuff they would charge us. So I dropped it. I let it go. But then I started thinking this year that, wait a minute, we need to reinstate enough is enough, because that's what time it is. Enough is enough. We're not taking it anymore. But in order to do that, we have to get organized. So I've reflected on Stokely Carmichael and others who have been talking about organization and getting organized to change the condition, and that's what I came up with, enough. And so we're under those banners, enough and Phoenix Rising Drumbeat Coalition. We're going to move forward. We're going to move forward with the drum. We're going to move forward with organizing our people, educating our people, and changing our own condition. The change is going to come. The change is here, and it's us. You know, we're going to make the change. We're not asking anybody to do anything for us. We're going to do it for ourselves. Open the door. We don't open it, we're going to knock it down, but we're going to do it for ourselves. That's where that came. And it is also an outgrowth of Dr. King's Operation Breadbasket, which has never been explained, to my knowledge, to the population. Operation Breadbasket was designed to take back our corner stores. It was designed to open our own supermarkets, our own it was the same design that Elijah Muhammad had, okay? But because of the organized division between the Muslim community and the so-called Christian community, it wasn't going to happen because, you know, we were at odds against each other. Until Malcolm and Dr. King came together and said, wait a minute, it ain't about that, y'all. We got to come together. They're going to get all of us. They ain't asking us what your religion is when they shoot you and hang you. They're just taking you out. So that's how that came about, and we're pushing it now. We're organizing as we move.
Mm-hmm. Could I add something to what Brother Ray was just saying?
Sure.
And everything is in divine order, because you said, where were you and Dr. King at in Georgia?
I believe it was Sanders. I can't remember. That's been so long now.
It was Sandersville, Georgia. Elijah Robert Poole was born in Sandersville, Georgia. That's where the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was born.
How about that?
That's about 20 miles from where I live at. I live in Edenton, where Alex Walker was born. And Elijah Muhammad, his name was Elijah Robert Poole. He was born in October. He was the seventh child of 13, and then he came up there to Detroit. And why they have Savior's Day is because Faraj Muhammad was born February 23rd, the same day Malcolm was killed.
See, this is all valuable. This is valuable info.
Yes.
People need to hear this and know these things.
Yes, this is not his story. This is our story. Now, you are reorganizing this African American National Unit United Foundation. So is this where everyone is gathering towards, or we can send our support? You need financial support, you need physical support, and things like that. And I noticed one of the patterns that the system does is that they send people in to infiltrate.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You can call some names, and people will understand. So they came into SCLC to infiltrate and try to destroy it. Dr. King had to ask them to go on to leave. And, you know, after they took him out, they took over. So, you know, and I watched all of it, but there's nothing that I could do at that point. Well, nothing really anybody could do about it, because it was such an organized attack going on people. That was an organized attack. It was, came from the highest levels of government in this country. And, you know, that's a hard That's a hard enemy to deal with. So, yes, it's organized. It's being organized, and we need help. We need a meeting with some computer experts. Two of them I've known for some time, so I trust them, and I've watched them over the years, and I trust them. But we've got to be able to compensate them for their work. I mean, we have to do that, you know. People have to live, they have to eat, they have to have a roof over their head, and, you know.
Right.
And we you know, we have this attitude that if you're doing that, it ought to be free. Give me a break, please.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has to eat. Everybody got to survive. You know,
that's right.
My Cuban-American friends who came here, they came here with hundreds of millions of dollars in what they call the Cuban-American National Foundation, you know, and that's how they were able to do what they've done. And as all that money was free to them. Sorry. It was free, our money. And we can't get the same thing, but we could do this without them. And, you know, so that's where it is. And once we've done it, and we have put people in position who are committed to justice and independence, and we are free. I don't like to use that word. We are already free. What you going to do with it is what I'm saying to people.
Mm-hmm.
Just do something with it.
And the other part, Brother Ray, and what you're sharing is we have to ask the question, how does this free us? Is that if you want to be free, what are you willing to do to be free? You know, because MONEY stands for my own natural energy yields. Is you want to put your energy into what's going to free you. And these are the ways in which our ancestors came out of 1863 with nothing in their pockets, nothing basically on their backs, no place to call their own. But they were able to build and construct. And we saw every time they built and constructed, they burned it down like Tulsa. They did Rosewood. The thing that we can look at now is that we've got more than we did when we came out of 1863. How is it that we are not in the position to say, where is our black bottom that was in Detroit? Where is our buttermilk bottom that was in Georgia? Where is our Tulsa, Oklahoma? Where is our tobacco world in Chicago? We don't have those. We don't have those type of communities where we have to walk to the grocery store and there's not an Arab in there, but it's somebody that looks like us. We don't go to a doctor and they look like somebody from another country. Those doctors look like us. Those nurses look like us. We've got to look at how have we now thinking that we have gained more. But even if we've gained more, how is it that we've gained more and somebody come in as an immigrant and the Mexican people have surpassed us at number two in minority and make $1.9 trillion and we're only making 1.3. We're losing something. And Bev said it, you know, the Arabs there, when they tried to open up the fish market, the Nation of Islam opened up and had restaurants all over Chicago. They had farms down here in Georgia. They had their own fleet of boats that they were selling whiting fish and supplying their oil. What happened to that constructivism in building for self? That's what Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois argued with until Booker T. died. Because he said we need to build the places, the HBCUs, to where we train our children to be self-sufficient in the construction. And then you had the other HBCUs that were doing for the academics. So we did more with less in the colored schools than we do in these Ivy League schools that we now have degrees and wall plaques hanging all over our offices. But we haven't, that didn't free us. How is this going to free us? And even the part when you said we're doing the spiritual warfare, because even when you look at the stories I just said, Robert Poole died on February 25th, 1975, 10 years
and 2 days after he killed Malcolm.
Mm. You said after he killed Malcolm.
That's what he was sharing. After, mm-hmm. Because the thing was, is that the whole setup was, is that, yeah, the government did just like they did with King, but he was able to convince those in the nation that Malcolm was getting ready to go higher in what he was starting in his own nation that he was starting. Malcolm had made the Nation of Islam. He was the spokesman, and he had brought, and he started the FOI. He started the newspaper. All of these things that he brought in and began to do, and yes, they had great men and his wife, I forget her name, the school was named, but she started the school.
Betty? And so, you're talking about Betty?
No, not Betty Shabazz, no. This was
okay.
Clara
okay.
Muhammad. Clara
okay.
Muhammad.
Okay.
She started, and she started the schools, and she was a scholar within the nation. And so what we've seen now is we've seen that happened, what happened in the nation. We've seen what happened in SCLC and what happened in that. Now we got to look at how do we work together, because if you put a leader, they're going to cut the head off. Then the body
right,
dies. But if you organize
right.
and you have
you
everybody on the same page, when one falls, the other one picks up.
Yeah.
That's the idea that was put together by Walter Fauntroy when he was chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. And Ossie Davis and Walter Fauntroy got together. I have a plan. I have the plan. What we're trying to do is we've got to get enough support so that we can reproduce this plan and get it into the hands of everybody who wants it, because it is a plan of action, and if we follow it, it will work. But the Congressional Black Caucus did nothing with the plan after it was presented to them in 1971. So now we have the opportunity to reproduce this thing, add to it, you know,
mm-hmm.
update it, if you will, and get it out into the hands of the people, because we have to make a change. And as Sam Cooke said, change is coming. The change is here. We just have to, you know,
it's
work
here.
It's here.
Right.
We can do this thing.
Right. And they know it, because even the way that the reset must make a slave, they knew it was only going to last. They wrote it in 1712, and it was only going to last to 2012, because that's divine order. That is the alignment of the heavens, and this is where the solar system and the galaxy, where we, this whole system has moved around, and we're in another place in the galaxy, where in that circle, that which was on the bottom is moving back to the top. The first shall be last, and the last will be first, and this is what we're
yes.
seeing happen. This is the divine order. All we have to do is organize. There is a divine order, and if you organize with the divine order, you will follow that circle of life.
That's right.
We're working
that's
on
right.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Brother Ray, I'd like to add this. I want all of us to be like one copper brown penny. All right, every one of us. We're going to have to be like a penny. I'm down to $1 million. I'll be like a penny. And all it's got to be a penny. The 1 cent. All right? S-E-N-T. The 1 cent. That's our job, man. Everybody on this call.
Right. Mm-hmm. And even with that being the 1 penny, Brother West, when you got 99 cents and you got 1 penny, how much you got?
Yes, sir. You
how
got a dollar.
You got
a whole thing.
You got a dollar.
Yeah.
So we the 1 cent, man. It's on to us to do this, man. We built for this time right here, man.
Right, and it's the few that's going to save the many. And this is what even happened when you look back at the civil rights and all the movements. And it was the women in places that gave energy to, and the men that stepped forward. And this is what we are looking at now. We're coming back into the age of this era of Aquarian, and these are the energies of the divine.
And so when we combine, because every man has a belly button. Every man comes from a woman. And if we can't overstand our mother wit, and, you know, this is what we're looking at, and being able to look at how do we come back to balancing with our women. Because when you unify the family, you build the nation. Because when you spell M-A-N, and my acronym is to make another nation, but you got to have a W-O-M-A-N, a womb to make another nation. A womb to make another nation. We can't do it alone.
Artificial womb.
No, you're going to do like Dick Gregory said. They're out here making test tube babies. Kids going to grow up being in love with mason jars and pop bottles.
Let me open this line and bring someone else to the mound table. 413-478. 413. Okay, you have your hand raised. Do you have your mute on? Because we can't hear you.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Good afternoon. Better love. Yes, we can.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm enjoying this show. I'm Marie Crenshaw, and I live in Massachusetts, and I've been working.
Okay.
Thank you, Brother Ray. You are right on. All of you all are right on point. Everything that you said is exactly what we have to do. I drum with Brother Ray, myself, some of my family members. We get together every Sunday at 3 p.m. and we drum. We sing the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. We pray.
Okay, wait a minute. I don't want to cut you off. I said 12 noon, but that's not correct. You say it's 3 p.m. Sundays.
Yes.
Is that correct?
3 p.m.
So I'm going to correct myself.
Okay.
I'm Eastern,
Eastern
too. So it's 3 p.m.
Okay.
Okay, 3 p.m.
Yes.
Eastern 3
PM.
Standard Time. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, go
ahead. But we have noon.
That's 12 noon on the West Coast.
Yeah, and Eastern time hours is 3 p.m.
Okay.
But our youngest is not quite a little over a year old. And we drum with the children. We explain to them the importance of the reason why we are doing it. We give them a little bit of history about the Black National Anthem. And they enjoy it. They look forward to it. And it's growing. And I'm just so thankful and grateful that Brother Ray has been working so hard to keep this going. We appreciate him. I can relate to a lot of the things that he was saying about MLK. I did get a chance to shake his hand. He was preaching at one of the churches in Alabama, so I was able to shake his hand and just listen to him speak. So that was really an honor to be able to do that. And I'm not going to talk a lot because I've been kind of playing nurse tonight. I'm a master herbalist.
Okay.
And I have quite a few clients
okay.
that I'm working
okay.
with. So many people are just sick, and they want help. They need help. And I'm just praying, asking the Most High to give me the strength to keep me strong enough to be able to help my his people and help others that maybe need the help. It's been really rough. And one thing one of the young men said tonight was that, and it has to do with, I remember something my husband said, the people that are in power are not going to give up that power without a fight.
No.
And they're definitely not. And you know what? Some of us might lose our life in this battle, But it is a spiritual battle that's going on, a spiritual warfare. I agree with Brother Ray. We're going to have to stand strong. We're going to have to come together. And that is one of my mission, is trying to get more people to come together and be on one accord so we can stand up and fight. I'm going to be doing some things coming up soon. I don't really, to be honest, I don't think we have much time to come together. I think we should have been a long time ago. We're past 10.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to now. We have no other choice. So I'm willing to do whatever I can to work with whoever. You know, it's not about me being in lead of anything. I just want to be one of the Indians. But I just, you know, I'm trying all I can. And thank you so much for taking this call.
And before you go now, you holistically, so what do you think that, what could people do? Because, you know, we under attack, our health, everything, you know. So,
yes,
and I think
yes.
This is also a perfect time of opportunity for people to come together and open up holistic clinics.
Absolutely.
And we can have pharmacy. And we can have pharmacies in those clinics, but not medicine. You can go to,
absolutely,
just like they got their clinics open up with the medicine. How come we can't have holistic clinics open up and you can get,
absolutely,
your herbs from there? How come that someone else can't, that's in the insurance industry, can't come together and put a plan together that you can get help holistically just like they do it in the medicine?
Absolutely.
The model is already there.
Absolutely. And I agree wholeheartedly. I came down with, I lost my husband. And, from the so-called whatever, COVID, 2020.
Okay.
In May. My only regret, I don't know, I'm trying not to beat it on myself because I said I could have done more, but he was in the hospital. I did all I could. I just couldn't get to him.
Yeah.
I was not able to get to him, get in there to him. I was tempted to break the door down.
But they were keeping everybody away back there.
Yeah.
And they did that through the CARE Act. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I could not see him. His children was never able to say goodbye. Daughter and my son was never able to say goodbye to their dad. I had to beg and plead, and I cried. And I'm not ashamed to say that I cried because and begged him to let me see him at least 5-10 minutes before they knew he was leaving this world. And I had to really plead to just see him. I did get a chance to see him for maybe 15 minutes and then another maybe 35, 40 minutes because my daughter gave up her place to be able to let me be there with him. It was rough. It was rough. We went through, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. We went through hell. Pardon my friend. But we went through hell.
That's okay. You did.
It was things that happened. Neglect took place. I was crying out for help. I wrote letters, president, and my congressman, my senator, begging them, please just let me be able to go see him and let me have some input on what was going on as a master herbalist to help him. I was not able to do that. So
yeah,
I feel really bad about
that.
It. But there was something
your fault.
That came out of it. Absolutely. It wasn't I understand that now. I realize it was not my fault. But I also came down with COVID, and I put together, my daughters and I put together a COVID prevention kit. It helps anyone that maybe feel that they've come down with it, have them to be able to recover at a faster rate. even help them to get over COVID, because it's a matter of keeping your immune system up. So anyone that would like to know more or help, they can go up on my website. It's Marie's Health and Herbs at, no, it's Marie, I'm about to give you my email. It's marieshealthandherbs.com. M-A-R-I-E-S. Marie's, my middle. M-A-R-I-E-S, Marie's Health, H-E-A-L-T-H, A-N-D, written out, H-E-R-B-S, com. And even if they want to send me an email, they can also Marie's Health and Herbs at gmail.com. And they'll see a picture of it. It's a combination of herbs. I will talk to anyone. Matter of fact, I was had a client today that she is on some of the formulas that I have to help her with some other things that she's dealing with. I'm getting bombarded with people like, what can I do? You know, can I use this tea? Because I deal with not just, you know, COVID, cancer. I deal with a lot of different other ailments. So, but if they want to know more, if they want to call me, I don't mind giving my number, which is 413 area code 478-9311. I'll do whatever I can to help you. I'll coach you along, let you know what, you know, you can do. For as with the COVID, it's a combination of natural herbs, which I use from the wormwood to the echinacea to the elderberry. These are all herbs that I took when I kind of sailed through it, really, to be honest. I didn't get any headaches. I didn't get any of those symptoms like fever and all that stuff they were saying. I just did the natural herbs. I did black seed oil. I did other things that I knew that would help me get through it. Oregano, which is in this kit. I put everything together that we did because my whole family got it. So we said, okay, we're going to quarantine. We're going to do what we know. Mom knows what we need to do. So we put it together, and this is, you know, we came up with that prevention kit for COVID.
See there. See there. Yeah. And that's what I'm talking about. And now what about if people have took that shot and they want to get that stuff out of them?
Well, it's definitely what this is going to do. What I would say to them, if they've taken the shot, do the tea, which is called it's a nurse's tea that I carry. It's a gentle detox. What it does is flushes out anything that's in your system. It helps to shrink tumors. It helps to detoxify your body. It purifies your blood. It does a whole sweep. Just go all through and just eliminates anything that shouldn't be there. And I often tell people, my clients that's on it now, do it on an empty stomach. You don't want the food it to work too hard trying to get through the food that you're eating. So if you do it a half hour before you eat, half hour after you eat, before you go to bed at night. You can do it in the mornings or before you go to bed at night. But this tea will go through it. I have testimonies of people that have gone on it that has helped them. I have one particular client, and I'm not going to take up much of your time. The doctor gave him 4 months to live, and he came to me, and he was sad. He was so sad, and he said, because he knew the type of work that I do, the research that I've done. I had 4 years degree from University of Massachusetts. I went back to train. My parents were midwives, herbalists, so I wanted to take mine to a higher level. And this is why I went back to school and got my degree in it, in holistic medicine. But anyway, to make a long story short, because I've done a few shows, I was on a radio college, a DJ, so... But that's another whole story. I won't even get into that one because they took me off the radio because they didn't want to hear the truth. But that's all in the past. But anyway, they can do that tea, which has four different powerful herbs that work synergistically
to eliminate, which burdock root, sheep sorrel, I even grow that myself, turkey rhubarb, red clover, which purifies the blood. But all that goes together to help accomplish what you're trying to accomplish, to eliminate anything. And even if you're not trying to, just as a preventive, that is also good.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the young, the man that, well, he was a friend of the family. He said, the doctor gave me 4 months to live. I said, come on, no doctor can tell you when your time is up on this earth. I said, you believe in a higher power. I do too. The healing comes from him. So he started to taking everything. I had him change his diet. I said, you have to come off all the GMO foods. You've got to come off those chemicals and all that stuff. That was number one. Get rid of it. We made sure he got rid of everything. Matter of fact, my son helped out on that one. He said, this got to go, that got to go, this got all processed food. It's got to go, got to go. He is doing fine, put on weight, back doing his electrician work and everything that he was doing before. So that's the moral of that story.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So we know
Excellent.
It works. We know it. It's mm-hmm. a good thing to. It's not going to hurt you. It's nothing that's going to make you, you know, it's not nasty. Everybody, some people ask, well, is it nasty? I said, no, it's not. I said, it's just like you're taking some filtered water and it's been added, the teas, because
mm-hmm.
it's concentrated. And once you take it, it will go in there and get in those cells in your body to remove anything that's not supposed to be there.
And that's what they are attacking, the cells, the stuff that they
yes.
that they given is going into, so you are able to, because the cells rejuvenate anyway, we constantly
yes.
get new cells. So,
absolutely.
You know, if your cells is damaged, you know, those, you're going
right.
to be able
it
to flush
work.
Them out and keep the new
absolutely.
Cells and make them healthier.
Absolutely.
So that's what
also,
we need.
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. another little that people might be interested in. It's called cell food, now that we're talking about cells. I don't know if anyone ever heard
okay.
of that. It comes in like a little small bottle.
Mm-hmm.
It makes quite a few gallons. What it does, it puts oxygen in every cell of mm-hmm. your body.
Yeah.
Without oxygen,
yeah.
I often tell people, my clients, I say, okay, we can live without water for only so long. You can live without food for a little longer, but how long can you live without oxygen? And they say, oh.
Not long.
I said, okay.
Not
this
long.
This is what's going to put that, absolutely. And it put oxygen in every cell of your body. It helps with fibromyalgia. It helps with all other things, cancer. And they're not going to tell you that. It helps. I can't say heal because of the... You know how that is, the FDA and all that. But I'll say it'll help you. But we know they did
mm-hmm.
a study on some South Africans, and it reversed their HIV/AIDS. They did a study. I can't even get the book. My son said, Mom, go get the book. You need to share that book. They said, we are not supposed to have anything to do with that book. If we do all that study, we will close you down, your health food will store down. So that's, I just ran up into a wall.
Well, Marie, let me just say this at this point. I am so proud of you. I've known Marie and her husband, Leroy, since, 2010?
Quite a while, We were fighting the BP oil spill.
we worked on that BP oil spill together.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And Leroy would have been our general, Wesley. You would have been you and Leroy would have been Ace Boone Coons because Leroy had the same attitude that you have
right
and it's
he
one that we need to today.
He was
I called him up. Man. I called him up. I talked to the ancestors. Called him up.
No holds barred. He worked hard.
Well,
Ray knew about the radio station. Ray knew about that radio station and. He was hacked He had people coming from all over the country after him. He says, I'm a nobody. Why are they after me? He said, well, man, his webmaster says, you must be something, buddy, because they're after you. And they hacked him, but he got it up running again, that radio station, that internet radio station. He was determined to get it back up and running.
Well, that's why it was so important that we got that information out. And he was very instrumental in getting this information out before we had all of these blog talks. He had a radio, and we would use that radio to talk, you know, about what was going on. And that's what kept us kind of moving until we get to where we are now. And it's getting stronger, and we're going to get stronger, you know, as we go, you know. And, of course, we really need to get the alternative medicines involved, but we have to take charge of that because the system is doing everything it can to kill us off, to kill off the truth about the natural healing. So,
And there's a few tips, too, that I want to share. I'm going to start writing them down because I do have information. I've been doing this stuff for quite a while. I've been attending different workshops, but there are tips if anyone, like, because I know the COVID affect us sometimes, they said through the eyes, through the nose. You take a little bit of swab of honey just with a Q-tip and just swab it around in your nasals. Just, you don't have to have a lot, and just let it run back. And what it does, it kills any viruses, any type of bacteria and stuff like that. Honey is very, very good. So you can keep that in mind, but I'm going to be writing down so many different, you know, things that we can do to help our people. It's so much we can do. We can help fight cataracts. We can help fight all, like I tell all the, most of the clients, even my customer that comes into the shop, I said, the Most High have created so much. I mean, there's natural herbs for every ailment on this planet.
That's right.
But we don't know
That's
about
right.
them. And so we just have to really, really have an open mind, you know, and realize that, you know, there's stuff to help us. We don't have to be hooked up on all this doctor medications and all this.
And you're right about that. You're right about that honey, because you got they got to make sure that they get the raw honey, not that honey in the supermarket that's been. And I take honey and cinnamon, and that kills bacteria and the one do bacteria and one do virus. They do two different separate things. But I know that honey worked. Now, I didn't know about putting it in your nose, so I'm going to try that.
Yes, put it in that nasal, the swab it around a little bit. Because, see, that's where the COVID is hitting, going from the nose or maybe through the eyes. And this way you can kind of, you know, combat it before it really takes hold to your lungs and all that. But I grow, I don't know if you're familiar with turmeric. I grow that. I just bring it inside. Now, turmeric is good for a lot of things, too. Are you familiar with the turmeric?
I want to ask our sister a question before she go further. Y'all from Florida, y'all live on the Gulf Coast, right?
Yeah, I'm in Massachusetts.
No, not in Florida.
No, she's
okay,
in.
Okay, I thought.
She's
I thought I had lived on the Gulf Coast. On the Gulf Coast of Florida, I thought maybe he was in the oil spill. Because I know you had some people on there before with your brother Ray that got sick from the Gulf Coast.
Yeah,
No, and I'd like to greet Sister Marie, but, you know, you've been talking about the BP oil spill in 2010. The BP oil spill, we have to understand, when they do a major disaster, they're doing something underhanded in that. That's when they pass the Codex bill. The Codex bill, why she can't do certain things or use that book is because they passed the bill that the FDA has control over
you growing a garden, if you got a Ma and Pa garden in your backyard and you don't have a license from the FDA, they can come in and tear up and put you in jail.
Yeah,
this is what they did because, but what I'm sharing is that what they have done is, she said it in the beginning. She said the pharmacy, the farm you see is in nature. That is the farm that helps to heal because that's your plant relatives. Those are relatives that grow. They are related to you. Every plant. Is like you said, is and it is a medicine, and the part that we have forgotten. That's why the pharmaceutical company, they make a synthetic because you cannot patent a plant.
Can't patent.
They cannot get up. You cannot patent a plant. So what they did is they make synthetic and an artificial to make it because when she said they even did with the GMO. GMO is the only way that they're able to splice it together. They use what they call a gold gun. And they take thin layers of gold, catch, and make that seed grow to another seed where it won't reproduce. But see, the GMO that they, the genetically modified organism, is the opposite of the GMO, which is God makes originals, and that's why we come to nature.
Right.
God makes original. That's why the artificial intelligence cannot surpass the divine intelligence. The AI cannot compete against the BI, but they're attempting to by doing what? To attack us at the cellular level. That's why you have plasma TVs. Where do you get plasma from? Blood. And that's their way in.
Well, that's what we're doing by organizing our people. We will have all these entities that we've heard tonight. We will have the historical input from Brother Kwame. We'll have the medical, or should I say, the physical input from Marie and others. And we'll have, you know, a government, if you will, of people who want to have a life of peace and justice, which we do not have at this point. But this is what I mean by organizing, so that we put everything in place and have people of expertise in each of those areas so that we can put those things together and move forward.
And we can do it.
Hey,
Brother
Ray, I want to give y'all some information real quick, man. They're changing the name from GMO to BE, bioengineered. Okay, so that's how they're slipping it. They're going to slip the code.
Yes.
And this the code. I'm going to give you all the code on how to, you can tell it's something bioengineered by the numbers on your produce. If you see the numbers on stamp on the produce with that 4, that's bioengineered. If you see the first number is a 9, that's organic. That's the code, y'all. That's the code.
Okay,
so if you
I
get
remember,
something with a,
yeah.
Start with a 4. You start with a 4, that's bioengineered. Throw that in the dump. Don't even get it. Try to find everything with a start with a 9. All
right?
Okay.
Right, because 9 is what? 9 is completion. It's completed its cycle. 4 is means bio means it's biological that they've altered it to deal with the biology of the human. That's what they're doing, and that's what they're doing with the nanoparticles. In that they're able to know that this particle can be, why do you have to freeze a vaccine at 72 degrees below zero? Because it's a living organism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cryogenics, that's cryogenics. You do that with cow sperm and horse sperm.
One other
to
thing
make
I
it come back
say,
alive in the body.
Miss D?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is she still alive? I wanted to bring
your
attention, everybody. We Brother Ray was talking about the 5G. One of my friends, and she's very outspoken, and I wouldn't have a problem. She would be willing to work with us. She was just hit with that 5G about 2 days ago, and it the way it affected her. Her speech, and she went for a checkup, and they can't find nothing wrong with her.
They said she didn't have a stroke. Because the first thing hit me, I'm saying, I asked the daughter, did she have a stroke? And she said, I was on the phone. She said, and as soon as something happened with her, she don't know. I don't know who she was talking to, but, you know, she's been talking, you know, about what's going on, you know, and all the mm-hmm. stuff that's taking place. But it happened mm-hmm. when she was on that phone. She said, if something mm-hmm. would just happen. And it kind of got next to me because I couldn't hardly understand what she was saying to me. And I said, you want me to come over right now? And she says, no, come tomorrow. So I was over there last night with her, well, early evening. And you can understand what she's – I can kind of understand, but it's slow. It affected her speech. And she's saying in her heart that she she got hit with that 5G.
Right.
So she's going to go to the doctor tomorrow, and we're waiting to see what the doctor's going to say.
They
said her vital signs are good. Everything is good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the neural net, and this is what I'm saying. It goes through, your ears are connected where? Directly to your brain. So what you've done is you've done an electric shock to the brain and to the different areas of the brain controls the motor function. They can't find it because this is where the current is hit. And this is like being hit with a microwave. There was a movie back in the day, it was called Dial M for Murder. And remember when the people would pick up the phone, they couldn't put it down and the frequency would bust their brain?
Oh, wow. Well, what
That's
I was trying to figure out, what can
today.
I do to help her?
What about those things, those organs and things that you put on the phone?
What you've got to do is you've got to find tuning forks.
Okay,
and
I got both of them.
Right, and what you do is that you take that clear quartz crystal, and it's according on the frequency. They're just like the scale in music. Every good boy does fine. That's the in-between line. I can't remember all my music. But the thing is that when you hit that tuning fork and you transmit it through that crystal, because the phone is a crystal, and what they've done is they've shot a frequency of 5G that disoriented her brain. That's why she and Brother Ray was
slurring.
He was on the phone.
Right. That's mm-hmm. what happened to her. So I could help her by using the tuning and crystal.
Yes, ma'am.
You can do 528 or you can do 432. 432 is nature. 528 is love. Find a transmission on YouTube. They have them different ones. And then put a crystal on either side of her ear, clear quartz crystal, and play that tune and see how she works with that.
Okay.
528 hertz. 528 hertz.
That's love. But if you want to relax her and do what Massachusetts got snow now, so you can't do it. But
it's hard.
But the other thing you could do is you could just spike a copper tube down into the ground and run the wires into and ground her. But Brother West, can't you use the ground on an electrical outlet?
Yeah, but you got to be careful. Make sure you go to the one on the bottom. Don't go to the two prongs.
No, you can't do the two colors.
You could you got to go right to the where the ground at. The one that's like a little circle.
But that's why it'd be safer for them to try to hammer a copper tube down into the earth because she needs earth frequency. She's got to be tuned back into earth frequency. She's got to be grounded.
And also, can she take the tuning forks and just put them to her ear? And let that vibrate.
That'll work. That's good.
That's
now,
what
where
I
can
do.
I get
that's
the,
what I do.
Where do I get the
I got
mine
off of Amazon. I got mine off.
Okay.
I use the 528 hertz.
That's right.
Okay.
And I use the heart one.
Yeah.
That's right.
And what's the name
I always
of
remember,
it?
Whatever. 528 hertz. See, you got whatever they sent you, you fight sound with sound. They jacked
that's
us up,
right.
Messed up sound. You fight power with power. So you go up to on the 528, and you beat them every time. That's how I had to learn, because they were messing me up bad. So you fight fire with fire. All right, you got them.
So I can get it on Amazon.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, they got them. They got the different hertz. Yeah, they have the different tuning forks, yeah.
But our share in the clear quartz crystal is because all of our technology is made from artificial silica. Using the real silica is because the Earth's transmission that we use in the internet, which is the inner Earth where crystals grow, those are the recorders. And that's how they form, is by frequency. They form into sacred geometry shapes. And this is what's able to be transmitted and used to transmit sound to amplify it, because they're piezoelectric.
Okay. So how would she use the crystals? What would she do? Put the crystals on her body?
Put the crystals,
and then
let me share what you do. You take the crystal and put it by her ear. You take the tuning fork and you hit it, and you put it to the crystal. It will transmit just like the phone do. That frequency.
I can use any crystal. Just
clear
quartz crystal. The clear quartz, the clear one.
Oh, clear quartz. Okay. Okay, I have to get that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, I will.
And you can get Amazon. You can get
a
bag.
I'll get a whole bag, because maybe somebody else I might need it or something.
Yeah.
Oh, this is good information. Wow.
Yeah,
that
very
is great.
Good I'm gonna open. Let me let somebody else at the mound table, because we're getting.
Okay, thank you so much.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me see. No. Okay, that's okay. You good? They're gone. But this is very good information here. We got about 11 more minutes left. And any other information that we want to give out and share?
Now, do you do the blog every Thursday at the same time?
Yes.
Or?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Brother Ray, for giving me the information, the number and everything to call in.
Mhm.
Yeah, this has been really helpful.
Yeah, well, that's
all
what
about
it's about when we all come together.
Yes, all about information and teaching and passing it on.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
And also, too, if anyone, like I got, like he was saying, the young man was saying about the garden, and I'm like, I have to check out, because I do try to grow. I don't have a big garden, but I do try to grow some of my herbs. Some of them are a little bit harder. I do the turmeric, which is awesome for pain. Anybody that's going through some sciatic back nerve pain, I have an awesome, you can do tablets, or I have a cream that I get from the Amish that is excellent for pain. You just rub it on, it stops instantly. The other curcumin, which it kind of goes deep within to help knock out the root cause of the problem. So turmeric is like a regular Indian spice. I mean, we can cook with it. You can put a little bit in your food. It's a great spice, but it really, they found out it helps with pain. So they added a few more things to it. Yeah, that really helps it work good.
Yeah,
and
then it's really, it really
you
can.
Honey and cinnamon.
You
said you
say,
use honey
say it again.
And cinnamon?
Yes,
honey and
I,
cinnamon.
Yeah,
you can
honey.
Take, yeah, she did mention
yes.
honey, yeah, cinnamon. Which is good.
Yeah,
cinnamon is good for the pancreas. It's
Cure helps cure diabetes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very good.
And I drank that too. I eat too much sugar.
I always put it when I make coffee. I always make my coffee with cinnamon.
Mm-hmm. But don't use white sugar. Don't use white sugar.
I don't use sugar in my coffee.
Yeah.
I don't
use
better
sugar. Off with
that.
Don't use aspartame. Don't use any of those sweet and low come off of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're all cancer.
When I order a cup of coffee, I say I want it black like me. That's it.
Absolutely.
That's what I do.
That is the best.
Yeah.
I use
beautiful.
A natural stevia, you know, which comes
but
from a
coffee,
plant. I grow the plant.
Right. But coffee in itself is a stimulant for the heart. And the other part of coffee is caffeine and nicotine are the only two plant medicines that stimulate the whole brain. And that's why it's so hard for people to quit smoking and drinking coffee.
Right.
Because it stimulates the whole brain, not like drugs with the thalamus and the pineal. But the other part of coffee... And it's really funny because if you ever roast coffee beans and you go to a coffee house and they roast beans, the skin, like on peanuts, is the caffeine, and you take the skin off, and now you have decaffeinated.
Mm, okay.
Wow.
Well, we are getting down to time here, and I want to give out the information because, you know, this a change is coming, and we are all part of this change that's being made right here. And I also want to say, Sister Kim Western, she has a GoFundMe page, and I have that listed here on here. So send your donations to Kim Western. And also, Raymond, give out your information again.
Yes, we have Cash App at this point, Raymond Fauntroy. That's $ Raymond Fauntroy if you want to support what we're doing. And our website will be going up sometime next week, I'm sure. And we will have all this information that we're presenting on those websites. We've hesitated all these years to do it because it's been so potent. We've had a couple of them taken down. We had one for the oil spill that was taken down, and we've tried to get information out, but now they can't stop us, so let's get it done. And,
but Ray,
right. Support our own,
you didn't say anything about Tuskegee Airmen.
We didn't get to that.
We'll come back and do that.
Yes, we didn't get to that, but yes, the Tuskegee Airmen is very important. As you may know real quickly, that General McGee passed that a week and a half ago now. His services will be held this week. And he was the oldest of the Tuskegee Airmen. And one of those who my brother was close to and under. We have to pay homage to these people, and we have to make them our heroes. We have to do this because the system is not going to make a statue of him and those brothers who gave their lives and fought for this country to keep us from speaking German. But we got a job to do, y'all, and we have to come together to do it. And we have to form our own government within the government will to achieve what we need to achieve. And understand that the power is in. Not be afraid of it.
Now, when is his service going to be again?
They're going to have two services, one Saturday and one Sunday. The one Sunday is a closed service to the family and for the family only. And the one Saturday will be an open service. I haven't gotten the website or the stations. It'll probably be on the normal stations because he was a loved man. He was 103 years old. Fantastic man, human being. My brother and I went to his birthday party last year, his 103rd birthday party. And you won't believe, he's just awesome, man. That's all I can say. He looked like he was in his 70s, in his 60s or something, 103.
Hey, Brother Ray, is that, that was the one they had up there in Congress that time when they did the tribute to him when they was in Congress. I think I know who you're talking about. I think I saw something on him the other day, man.
Yeah, they've done the presidents have acknowledged him at some of the rallies or the TV presentations after the presidency. After the elections, I should say, I'm searching for words. But after the elections, they've acknowledged him on a number of occasions because he was the elder in the war effort by this country as a Tuskegee Airman who has been given the position of saving this entire country and probably the world because of their efforts. And their significance to this war, to these wars that these people have started.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to do that. We're going to continue that. I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight, and we're going to continue this. And better love, and thanks everyone for participating. And
yes, ma'am. Don't forget about the Red Ball Express, man. There were some bad brothers in the trucking, man. Red Ball Express. Don't forget about them brothers, too, man. That's who Eddie Kitchen was talking about, the Red Ball Express.
Keep on trucking. All right.
That's right.
Everyone, better love.
This man who spoke has much to learn. A man is born that way. And this is America. A man is born to walk the land in search of truth and trust, to pass the roads from hand to hand and change the things he must. Oh, this is America, this land of mine. So I stand behind the land of the free and the home of the what's on his mind, to sleep beneath a quiet sky, unfettered, unconfined. Yes, this is America. A man is still a man in spite of anything he says, and for his freedom he will fight until it's here someday. Yes, this is